Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. We are joined once more by Mike Wall. You can find him on social media at MikeWall68, of course, on the Process to Perform YouTube channel as well. And now a lot more here on Pack-A-Day, also doing some awesome film breakdowns. And if you missed Pack-A-Day Live with Mike and I yesterday, make sure to check that out as well. Mike, great to be back chatting with you. I already asked you how you were doing on the live show, but I don't know. What else can I ask you? What's new in your world?
Well, in the last 5-10 minutes, Andy, you know, we just tackled this video problem that I'm always seeming to have. I'll tell you what, if I didn't have you talk through some of these AV situations, I'd be even more mess than I am on a normal day.
That may or may not be true, but to be fair, you figured this one out and I was looking through settings and stuff and I couldn't find anything. So this one was 100% you on the fix, but I appreciate it as always. It's always great catching up with you and tackling all the things that are going on with the Packers. We talked obviously a lot on the live show already about some of the different questions that people had about Matthew Golden and some of the pass defense things, the pass rush, things like that. But I want to just kind of give you the floor, first of all, here on any key takeaways that you had in Packers Bengals or maybe anything we haven't had the opportunity to discuss yet.
I think the first thing you always have to remember is it's hard to win football games in the National Football League. We're seeing it all over the season right now. There's a lot of parity in this league, which is exactly what they want. And I think it's a very good thing for the fans. I think it's a good thing for the league. It's a good thing to make more and more money, quite frankly. So when we get to these situations and you're playing against NFL players and NFL coaches and NFL schemes, and we have bad starts, we have turnovers, we can't run the ball effectively. You know, we make Jamar Chase, who's one of the better receivers we're going to see in this generation, is making plays on guys. Like, everybody take a deep breath, relax. It's good to win football games against bad teams. You can still learn something when you lose football games. When you win football games, I love winning and learning. It's not win or learn, it's win and learn. There's so much, and you know, the hard part about breaking these films down sometimes is, especially if you're an offensive lineman, Andy, like, I will look at things pretty much only from the negative. Like, my default is everybody did everything right, and then I'll just start nitpicking the things that weren't right. And that's just the way that offensive linemen think about life, unfortunately. So, like, my kids hate me for it because I'll go to like a soccer game and go, man, you turn the ball over a bunch. It's like, well, you turn the ball over in a soccer game, right? But when we watch these films, you know, you go through it and you go, okay, what we can do, what we can do, what can we do better? What can we do better? And the reality is a lot, we can do a lot better. But having said that, we're still winning football games. They're still figuring out. We still got some weapons coming back. And I think this is a very exciting football team. It's just, growing pains are painful, but this could be a lot worse.
It really could. And I'm so glad that you brought in this direction. We didn't talk about this ahead of time. I struggle with this a lot. I understand when you go and trade for Micah Parsons, you've been a playoff team the last couple of years, there's immediately a set of expectations. And I just wish sometimes that people understood it's not that simple. Like, there is a process to all of this. I know you're very process driven. There's a process that goes with this, and you're not playing your best football in September and October. And you do want to see growth. You do want to see signs of improvement. I understand that. I don't think this was the sexiest game that Green Bay has ever played. And I think there's, like you said, things that they can do a whole heck of a lot better. I also just look across the league and I don't think any team's playing at a Super Bowl level right now where you look at them and just be like, well, they're an unbeatable juggernaut. And, you know, if Green Bay went up against that team, they stand no chance. And when they've gone up against Detroit, and I know maybe now Washington's not, who knows, but like, they've played well in some pretty good games. They've played not so great in some other games. Like, that's just kind of the state of the NFL right now. And the teams that can learn from their mistakes, that can go through the process and use the season to get better, to be playing your best football in December, January, and hopefully February, that's the team that's going to come out on top at the end of things. And it's just not they got Micah Parsons. Now they're going to play like a Super Bowl contender right away in September and October. It's not quite that simple. At least that's how I view it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's not how it works. And you know, Bill Parcells, I think, was the coach that said, you are what your record says you are. And the Packers are a really good football team, according to their record. And so, yeah, you have a lot of things to work on. There's a lot of improvements to be made. And maybe understanding how to utilize certain players. We talked about it during the live show of, you know, does Micah Parsons need to line up at defensive end and go against their worst player? Or should he line up in the middle and run a bunch of different stunts when we have Adrian Cooper and Quay Walker that do that really well already? Like, those are questions that Jeff Hafley, those are questions that Matt LaFleur have to work through, and that's part of the process. We're going to try all this different stuff when we get all the receivers back. How are we going to use Christian Watson? And how are we going to use Jaden Reed? Is that going to affect Matthew Golden's catch, you know, number of catches that he gets or number of touches he gets during the football game? How does that affect Josh Jacobs' rushing attempts? Like, all of that is, like, this is an organism that you're constantly, you know, twerking and messing with, and that's part of the fun. I mean, the rest of all this stuff is like, you know, the cool thing about the Packers is this, really. Unless something terrible happens, you can pretty much guarantee you're a playoff football team right now. You're going to be in the playoffs. So, like, between now and then, you know, there's a lot of work to be done. But if I can just tell you from firsthand experience, if you're sitting in that locker room now, like, all you're trying to do is just get incrementally better at your job every single week and figure out how to show the coaching staff that you deserve to get more opportunities to do the thing that you shine at, because you're going to help. That's going to help the football team. Like, that's all those guys are worried about. So if anybody's worried about anything else more than the people that are directly involved, I'll give you a palms up. I don't know.
I just think too, like, there's like the journey to kind of what you were saying, the journey's part of the fun. In 2010, they were 3-3. There was a good portion at the end of the season where it didn't even look like they were maybe going to make the playoffs. And even there were still things in the playoffs that they were learning. That NFC Championship game, I know the BJ Raji play is the big side. Like, they struggled in that game to put any points on the board, and probably got a little bit lucky that Caleb Haney comes in that game. That was not a great performance even in an NFC Championship game, but they get through it. They get to a Super Bowl. They beat Pittsburgh. They get a lot of turnovers to begin that game. They kind of stave them off for the rest of the game, get a huge turnover to start the third quarter from Clay Matthews. And it also kind of transitions into, I think that's also the thing that's missing with this team, is just getting some turnover. If they start getting turnover, they're negative in the turnover differential right now. They actually start generating some turnovers, which has been a major issue for them so far. I think this starts looking a whole heck of a lot better as well.
Yeah, and it's always an interesting discussion, like, how are you going to get turnovers? What is that? What formula do you think works for you? And obviously, when you bring in a Micah Parsons, you go, like, oh, okay, well, the pass rush. So Chris Hovan said this one time in, like, on NFL Mic'd Up or something when he was with the Vikings. He was like, pressure equals picks. Yeah. He was just yelling at his guys, pressure equals picks. And I go, you know what? That actually makes a ton of sense, because it's not always the sacks that we always talk about, the sacks, or I don't know, we, but, you know, the collective we always talks about sacks. But when you get in the quarterback's face and he's got to get rid of the ball, he throws it high, whatever, like, those are the, you know, because turnovers are so important. Those plays are, like, from an offensive lineman standpoint, we're like, oh, Christ, you know, that was like the worst thing that could have happened. I'd rather have just taken a sack, right? So bringing in Parsons is obviously a big part of that. But the other thing we have to figure out too is, and I think that just generally, you know, I think Carl Brown and or Carl Brooks and Wooten are doing a nice job. I think that getting rid of Slayton and
Clark.
Kenny Clark, while they weren't necessarily great pass rushers, one thing that they do is they push the pocket. And so there's nowhere to step up. And all, like, that's part of the dynamic that you're dealing with when you think about a four-man pass, a pass rush. And you've got four guys on the field now almost at all times that are, like, you know, penetrating edge rushers. And you don't really have that guy who's always in the face of the quarterback now. And I'm not saying that's the only thing that's preventing them from turning the ball over, but all of those little things that you might not think about when you make these trades, like, you have to work through all of them. So how do we create that reality of, like, Joe Flacco can't step into his throws, for example? Like, all of that is part of the calculation that these guys make pre-trade and then have to deal with post-trade.
It's one of the things that goes really unnoticed sometimes, is when you see a lot of times, like, a really good sack, or when, like, somebody's getting home, a lot of times you're seeing multiple bodies that are collapsing the pocket around the quarterback. Because, I mean, how many times do you see an edge rusher get around the bend and then it just opens up that alley and the quarterback steps up and either has an exit point or they can just step up enough in the pocket to get that pass off anyway? It takes more than, like, even if you have a quick win like Micah Parsons is capable of doing, and the times where he's not maybe held from time to time. But, you know, even when he gets a quick win, if there's an escape route, if there's an alley that the quarterback can step up into, it sometimes, or a lot of times, doesn't even amount to much of anything. So it does feel like there can be a little bit better of a collective group effort. And to your point, I think it's really smart. I didn't even think of it this way, not having those pocket collapsers inside to make it so that there's no interior to step up into. That does play a factor in it as well.
Vinny Testaverde was like 40-41 when he was playing with me, and he was like, hey, just lose early because I can't get out of the way if you lose late. If I see him coming, I'll just get rid of the football, right? And that's kind of sometimes maybe what happens with a guy like Micah Parsons. But you think about, I think Jordan Morgan got beat late, and they got a little bit of pressure on Jordan Love, and he missed Tucker Kraft in the seam and overthrew him substantially, actually. Those are the plays that get picked. You know, the play where the guy feels like, oh, he's bearing down on me, I'm about to take one in the face, and I got to get rid of this football and maybe turn my head. Like, those are the plays that are really, really problematic. And sometimes, and that was a late loss, or that's somebody that's in your face. And so, yeah, it's never one thing. But what you do know is we have done very well in the turnover department historically. We do have the guys that are ball hawks. We have guys that can go in and make those football plays. So if it's not happening now, those usually happen in bunches. I would make the argument that based on how we play in the secondary, based on kind of what our philosophy is, a lot of that is going to come through the manufacturing of frontal pressure with the quarterback, and that starts with the defensive line.
Let's talk about that secondary and that pass defense. Obviously, against Dallas, it was an issue allowing 40 points, or 38 if you don't include the 2-point, you know, kick return. They've allowed a lot of points. They've allowed a lot of passing yards. We talked about on the live show a little bit, George Pickens, T. Higgins, Jamar Chase especially plays a little bit of a factor in that. But why has this defensive backfield maybe not been quite as successful, especially in second halves of games? And is there anything that they can maybe do a little bit differently to try to improve upon that? We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, you and I make decisions every single day, but on Prize Picks, being right on those decisions can get you paid. Don't miss any of the excitement this season on Prize Picks, where it is good to be right. It's time to start getting ready for Week 7. Yes, Week 7 already, as Green Bay is set to take on a dangerous Arizona team in the desert this Sunday. And let's just say I'm going to be keeping a very close eye on the top tight ends for both teams in this game. Elsewhere in Week 7, I'm going with a big game from Justin Jefferson and a dominant performance from CJ Stroud. Here's the best part. Prize Picks is the only app that offers stacks, meaning that you can pick the same player up to 3 times in the same lineup. Want to pick more on CJ Stroud's passing yards, rushing yards, and touchdowns? Now you can pick all of them in the same lineup only on Prize Picks. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. Don't forget to use that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. It's good to be right.
The first thing is that it marries up with the front half marries up with the second half, or the back half, is which we were just talking about. And if you're not getting, again, if you're not getting that frontal pressure, if a guy can step into his throws, more often than not, they're not going to throw a pick. We mix up our coverages a lot. We've played against some quarterbacks like Flacco can put the ball wherever he wants. And when in second half, you saw it. I mean, he doesn't even know what these routes are. He's just kind of, you can just tell, like he threw an out, I think it was to Chase on the left, and it was man coverage, and it was like a comeback. And he threw the ball like 1-2-3 plant go. And Jamar Chase was like 2 steps from turning around. I mean, it was an amazing throw, because otherwise he's going to get hit. And if you got guys that are like Dak Prescott was on one, right? You got guys that are kind of in the zone, that becomes an issue. A lot of teams think that when you play zone defense, because you get to look at the quarterback and you get to read eyes, you're going to have more opportunities to go after the ball. The downside of that is that smart teams now can sit down in the right zones. Sometimes, and we see this with our middle linebackers, plural, a lot, is they're sometimes get caught reading eyes and not moving to spaces. And I think a lot of teams end up doing that, but that a lot of this, if you think about like how many teams we play that like to run hookups over the middle, deep crossers, et cetera, sit downs, like that's a lot of the NFL offense. Most quarterbacks don't want to throw the ball to the sideline. They want to throw the ball in the middle of the field because, this isn't the 1980s where you can take the receiver's head off. So those are actually easier throws. It's shorter airtime, et cetera, right? So because of that, like if you don't have that layered defense where those guys are really not only reading the eyes, but also moving to what they see, then you're not going to get as many hands on the football. And then again, it just goes back to, are they able to throw on time and are they able to step in their throws? And that's really something the defensive line can enjoy, or excuse me, influence.
Two of the players that were real weapons for Green Bay a season ago were Edgerrin Cooper and Xavier McKinney. And we haven't maybe seen them have quite as much impact. So certainly McKinney is not. Edgerrin's obviously still doing some good stuff in the run game, but hasn't been getting maybe the sacks and the big plays quite as much. Is there anything that this defense can do or Jeff Hafley can do to try to maybe weaponize those two a little bit more and maybe try to get them going a little bit more?
That's a great question. I mean, we talked about it on the live show. I think Edgerrin Cooper and Quay Walker are really good rushing the passer. So, you know, allowing them. And I tell you what, they had a run stunt this last week that I was like, man, that's almost impossible for it to block. And they were running zone right. Bengals running zone right. And they kept the defensive end wide and they shot Edgerrin Cooper into the A gap. They shot the safety into the B and they shot Quay Walker A gap safety into the B. And then Cooper ran around and ended up making the play in the C gap. And you're like, that is an unblockable stunt versus a run, right? And so they're doing a lot of stuff that maybe we don't, that goes unnoticed. It works well in the run game. I think the problem right now in the passing game is Cooper can make a ton of plays, but if you don't make plays for tackles for loss, I think he had a couple in this game, but if you don't make tackle for loss plays, like he had like 11 or 12 tackles, he led the team in tackles and tackles for loss this last game, right? But if you don't have sacks, if you don't have those hits, then nobody notices. Like, oh, he's not having the same year. It's like those things come up usually because with a linebacker, because of what's being called. So you have to put him in the position to be successful. That changes with Micah Parsons obviously being there because there's so many options and tension around him. And then the Xavier McKinney thing, like, Xavier McKinney came in and just couldn't have had a better start to the season last year. You get the big contract, you're a big free agent, you're a big deal guy, and then all of a sudden it's like you just rattle off, what is it, like four interceptions, four games in a row, and just dream scenario, right? Like that's not going to – you got to revert to the mean eventually. Like that's not going to happen every year. But again, I'll go back to it. If you throw the ball in his direction and he has a chance to make the play, I'm going to say that – you know, I'll bet on him making the play. The reality is we're just not quite getting to those situations where that we have enough errant balls. Like you just don't see a lot of errant balls across the middle like you did last year for whatever reason.
Yep.
And the more you get, the more opportunities you get, the more that NFL players make plays. And they just for whatever reason, they're not getting those opportunities. It kind of goes in line, Andy, like not to go off on too much of a tangent, but when you start talking about how hard it was for like Brett Favre to play football versus Jordan Love to play football. Like Jordan Love or these, you know, everyone's like a 70% completion percentage. It's like, are you crazy? Like, you know how many bubble screens they throw? Like, you know how much stuff at the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage they're throwing? Like this, it's a completely different game. And that affects everything, including the job of the defensive back now is of all the positions, defensive back is the most difficult to play versus 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. Because they have all these restrictions on how they can hit people. They have, and there's so much stuff that's quick game, RPO, behind the line of scrimmage. They can't get their hands on the football. They got to take risks. That's why you saw like Diggs a couple years ago lead the league in interceptions and big plays in the same year.
Yep. No, it's true. If you've got the ball skills, it definitely helps. But yeah, you have to have a well-rounded skill set to play in the defensive backfield in the NFL right now. Communication, tackling, rallying to the football, obviously cover skills, man zone. It is quite the job description. And like you said, a lot different than it used to be. And just going back to turnovers just really, really quick. Is turnover luck a thing? Is there, I know obviously pressure equals picks and there's things that you can do, swiping at the ball more, trying to punch the ball out more, et cetera. But it does feel like sometimes there's just a little bit of turnover luck that goes. I mean, this one is almost a great example of, now again, Jordan made a bad decision, but the ball gets tipped up. And then of course there's a player right there in Geno Stone that's waiting for it. That's a little bit of good luck for the Bengals. Then they kind of created their luck and Jordan created some bad luck on that play, but he's right there. There's another play where Flacco goes over the middle and there's one that's tipped up and it stays up in the air and it just falls harmlessly incomplete and there just doesn't happen to be a safety in that area. But like, I'll just let you answer the question before I babble on any longer.
Yeah. So I would look at luck like the Commanders game last night. The Commanders game last night, first series, Jaden Daniels should hit Debo in the seam for a touchdown. He waits a hitch and that waiting is the bad luck, right? It's just like they should have been beat. If you're the Bears, you're like, I just got beat. And I went from I just got beat to I got a touchdown because there's nobody in front of him. He doesn't have to evade a rush. He just waits too long. So I look at those things and like, that's luck to me because you don't expect that player to make that play happen. Or right. at the end of the game where it's raining, so he fumbles the snap and like throws the ball into the running back's chest and they fumble the ball and they end up losing the game because of that kind of play. Like, that's what I consider luck. I think all these other things are just opportunities. If you get a ball, like if you get your hand on a football and it hits the ground or it doesn't hit the ground, like you've created an opportunity and you probably can ascribe some sort of percentage chance that that opportunity is going to be fulfilled from a defensive standpoint, right? Whereas like the mental mistakes where you're like, dude, you shouldn't have read that ball, or you shouldn't hand the ball if you don't have it in your hands. Like those kind of things are what those are the plays where I go like, oh my God, you got to be the most unlucky, bastards on the planet for that to happen in the same game twice. Whereas, some of these tip balls and stuff, it's like, yeah, fair enough. But you're also in a position to make a play. Like you've done something good there.
No, that makes a ton of sense. We spent a lot of time on offense on the live show. We talked about Matthew Golden targets. We talked about Jordan Morgan at right guard, Rashid Walker at left tackle, kind of the offensive line in general. We talked over some of Jordan Love's, kind of turnover decisions and things like that. I do just want to talk briefly on the offense, though. I know we kind of touched base on offensive line and Josh Jacobs. There was some good. A lot of it happened late in the game. But I just want to frame it this way. What's the next step for this Packers offensive line as they, fingers crossed, hopefully continue to get healthier, to continue to add opportunities for Josh Jacobs to be the guy that's getting some of those 100-yard performances on the ground?
Finding one human on the defensive line and removing them from the line of scrimmage. As simple as that. So if they're running duo, and they do this in games, it does happen, but consistently getting the two down defensive linemen that usually have four hands on or two sets of shoulder pads on, getting them moved at least 1 yard off the line of scrimmage. What happens in the plays that are not working out for Josh Jacobs is that, and usually it's because of footwork. And sometimes I almost think, Andy, that like maybe I just don't understand the way they're being taught to block it. And I'm being sincere there because it literally just doesn't make – sometimes you'll see them like get – ricocheted into somebody else. I'm like, did he mean to do that? Or is it just terrible footwork? Right.
Right.
But sometimes you'll see this, like, and it's a lot of times, unfortunately, it's with Jordan Morgan and Elgton Jenkins, cause they've been working in tandem, whether he's a right guard or left guard, but because they step underneath themselves or they stand straight up or something, they're kind of working against each other. And there's this big gap between one of them, like the defensive lineman, and then the other one's like kind of pushing the other one out of the way. They step horizontally or something. And if they can just fix, like, let's say you could fix one thing. If they fix that one thing, you're talking about, I don't know, another 40 yards on the ground. Like, it's a huge, huge deal because it opens up multiple lanes and it puts the linebacker in a bad position. So we saw it at least, I don't know, 6-7 times in this last game. And if they can fix that, you're talking about a strong number of yards. And I know the guys on the other side get paid to do their job as well, but this is a lot of this stuff, more often than not, is just literally a bad footwork issue.
So just reps and technique work, basically, in that situation?
It's an inherent, yeah. It's what it turns out to be is, like, I'll tell you what, if you're ever watching like a practice and you see, you know how like every offensive line in the league does like a board drill? They're just like run off the boards. If you see your line literally running like this off the boards, know that they're not being coached very well. It's like the easy, because it's like nowhere on game day when there's somebody in front of you as you come off these boards because work on your footwork, are you running like this, right? Your hands are in a certain place. You got to move them inside. It's details. And so it's like, how often do we hear, and I don't know what they do over there, but with the Packers, but like how often are we actually kind of diving into and adhering to the details? The thing that is always amazing to me is that if I look back and reflect on like my career and my era, the stuff that I'm saying now, I didn't ever think about maybe until year 7 or 8. And we didn't have access to information. We just literally, guys didn't think about the sport in that way. We didn't have all these coaches and this and that and the other thing. It was footwork was probably, I know with like Larry Bechtel, footwork is an important part of the game that we worked on every day. So maybe that's why. We didn't have to talk about it in these shows all the time, but you do see in this league, there's a, the huge difference between haves and have-nots in this league isn't the athleticism that everybody talks about. It's really your ability to kind of put yourself in the right position as you enter into contact, and that has to do a lot to do with your footwork.
Okay, totally random, off-the-wall question. If you had your prime team, your whatever your best team was in your career versus the Packers now, we'll just say the current Green Bay Packers, does the evolution and maybe some of the athleticism and some of the, just like kind of the coaching, whatever it might be, does that win out, or does the better technique maybe and fundamentals of your era win out? Like who wins that battle in the long run? We'll be right back.
Oh, wow. Here's the thing that I would probably challenge you on is because I'm very fortunate to be maybe even I'm a little bit younger than like Deion Sanders. But, you know, we had Amon Green, who, you know, I think at his combine ran a 4.1 something. We had Javon Walker. You know, we had some dudes now, you know, and, you know, our offensive line was pretty athletic. And so we had Brett Favre. So I'm not going to concede athleticism on our group to their group at all. I think what is different now is, and it's sizably different, is that the amount of receivers that you have at your disposal that can do crazy things is more than we had. I mean, I had Donald Driver. I had, at some point, I had Antonio Freeman, had John Walker, Robert Ferguson, you know, kind of spaced out, right? But, I mean, the guys that you have now, you know, I say Donald Driver and you put your best guy, I go, okay, fair enough. I like Donald. Like, I like my chances, right? And then, but you just keep going. It's like, how many guys do you guys have that can run a 4.2? You know, it's,
it's difficult. That definitely helps.
But Josh, Amon, like, I mean, I love Josh Jacobs, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you like Amon Green is going to, you know, be second place on that team. Like, he's a pretty good player now.
No, Amon was amazing. You're totally right. The athleticism thing's probably not true. It's just, I mean, I think in general, when I think of like, when I look at NBA is probably where I go with this more often of like, you see some of like the Giannis's now. And again, that's not to say that there wasn't, you know, some freaky players back in the day. Just feels like there's always been like an exponential rise in like overall athleticism of players. Different eras, different things.
Okay. So I'd push like Hakeem Olajuwon and Giannis Antetokounmpo are not different to me. Okay. The difference in athleticism, I don't think they're different at all. The difference is because the game has changed from a physicality standpoint and the way that Europe develops athletes, he just has a different skill set. They're not different. I mean, they're not different players. I mean, like LeBron James is the best athlete that maybe has ever walked the face of the earth. Like just a pure, like, oh my God, are you kidding me? Athlete. You won the genetic lottery.
Yep.
But Michael Jordan did have the highest vertical leap in the league for like 50 years, you know, some ridiculous amount of time. So like, again, this idea that the next generation has leapfrogged like it had in so many years prior, I think is not as accurate. I'm sure these guys are evolving, but it's not quite as accurate because when, at least from the people that are my age, we all started lifting weights early.
Yep.
And that's really what happens with these guys is like you find big framed humans and you teach them how to lift a lot of weights and run fast and everything. Now, do methods get better? Do methods get worse? Andy, I know we're going off a tangent from the Packers, but I would tell you that the difference between these generations is really more – it's like, I would rather burn out than fade away. And players now are like, no, we get paid too much. I'll fade away. It's cool.
Yeah.
And so the wanting to push yourself to that limit is like, I can keep it at 90% here for a lot longer. And that's going to be like $50 million. So you're Mike, you're crazy.
I definitely see that aspect of it as well. No, it's always a fun conversation. I think you've educated me on that topic. I think I'm more around to your side now than maybe I was previously. So glad we had that one. Really quick, Packers, Cardinals, what are you kind of watching for coming up in this game? What are your kind of keys to this one?
Well, I think they just need to keep progressing. I think the Packers are playing against themselves right now. Like, how do we continue to find the best version of ourselves? How do we continue to improve every week in and week out? Now, is Kyler Murray going to be healthy for the game? Like, I think Kyler Murray is just, he's a very polarizing player in the National Football League, but he's super talented. He's undeniably talented. And he just, every time you watch him, you're like, okay, well, you can't catch him. He's got a rocket arm. He's got all these things going for him. This would be one of those games that we were just talking about with frontal pressure because he can't see over the line, where you'd be like, man, it would be really nice to find that guy, those guys who can push the pocket and make him, you know, don't let him advance forward, make him run out to the sideline, try to do his thing out there. I just think that, you know, the Packers are just net a better football team. I would love to see them really, from the first quarter, establish a run game, be able to come downhill, like we just talked about, move people off the spot. The Arizona Cardinals on defense, they do a lot of shifting around. They'll get in a lot in 3 or 4 man lines. They like to bring slot pressure. I had to watch them for another team a couple of weeks ago. And look, I don't think they have what you would call a premier pass rusher on their team. I don't think they have these really kind of dynamic pressure packages, but they run a solid defense. I think man on man, this is one of those games where, like, let's go in with the expectations that we're going to win our individual matchups. Like, you know, if it goes to hell in a handbasket, we can go back traditional run, traditional pass, and we can win the football game.
Really quick, before we get you out of here, I'm wanting to know if there's anything to this at all. They start with 2 wins early in the season, Saints and Panthers. All right, they start 2-0. They lose by a point to the 49ers, yep. 3 points to the Seahawks, yep. Then a devastating 1-point loss to the Tennessee Titans, where they completely vomited away that football game in a variety of different ways. Then they come back, fight really, really hard without Kyler Murray to take the Colts to the end of that game, only lose by 4 in that game. And now you've got Green Bay this week, and you've got a bye coming up after this. Like, it feels like they've put a lot into these last 4 games with nothing to show for it. Had a brutal, devastating loss against the Titans in there, bounce back and work hard the following week, have nothing to show for that. At what point does a team like that start? I'm not saying quit or what anything like that, but I'm just saying, like, where does that start to wear on you? And when do you start maybe looking at, oh, we've got a bye week coming up next week?
Yeah, that's a great question. And like, I'll counter that with saying, when's the last time they were good? Like, what do they have that pedigree in their locker room where it's like, no, we can bounce back. We can, what are we playing for? Like, they're in one of the most competitive divisions. I mean, the Seahawks are good. The Niners, whether they have Mac Jones or Purdy, like, they're a good football team. I know they've had a couple big injuries recently. Fred Warner thing was devastating, man, but
big time.
But they've got, I mean, that is a really good division. So the question is for them, like, are there people in that locker room, Kyler Murray included, and probably most importantly, and I think Marvin Harrison Jr. went out last game with an injury, right? Just started picking up. So it's like the Miami Dolphins right now, Andy, where you go, who is going to go into that room and be like, you know what, I'll plant my flag in the ground. I'll be the guy. Get on my shoulders. You know, I don't know, because we don't know who watches the Arizona Cardinals. Like, I don't know who that is. I don't think it's Kyler Murray. Like, it doesn't seem like it's him from, you know, outwardly. It doesn't seem like he's that guy. So do they have that guy that comes back? Isn't Calais Campbell back on their team? So is it Calais who's like, you know what, guys, like, for this week, man, like, I got you. You know, I'm going to be that source of inspiration.
Calais Campbell, by the way, one of my all-time favorite.
Dude, he's such a great, what a phenomenal player. And like, he just seems like the best dude ever. Like, you just want to hang out with him, you know?
I wouldn't mind, Mike, a move there. If Calais wants to have one more chance at a championship.
Wouldn't that be fantastic?
How awesome would that be? How, like, he would be
just a winner too, you know?
Rotational fit. Yeah. Like, I'm all in. Obviously I don't think it would cost that much, you know, at his age. Probably got maybe 1 year left. That this could be it. Give him that opportunity to go win a championship. Cardinals are probably out of it if Green Bay wins this game. Sign me up.
When he came into the league, I remember just going like, are you kidding me? Like, he could flick you in the nose from across the room. His arms are so long. Like, what are we doing? Like, you can't block him. This is ridiculous.
The longevity of it, and how well he still plays, it's remarkable. Like I said, one of my all-time favorite players to watch in the league. Really quick prediction for this one.
I haven't looked at the stat line. I imagine the Packers are favored, and I think they should be. I hope this is a I would love to see a sound victory, like a 2-touchdown victory in this game. I don't want to put a score on it, Andy, but that's
fair
what
enough.
That's what the hope is.
6.5-point spread. The Packers are favored in this one. Favorites
seems fair.
In this one right now. Yeah, seems fair on the road. I think they win by a touchdown or more in this one, and I think it's never really in doubt. But yeah, I want to look at it a little bit closer as the week goes on as well. Mike, always, always, always appreciate it. These are always a pleasure to get to talk to you and pick your brain every single week. Obviously, Mike Wall, 68, Process to Perform. Any other final thoughts or anything you want to plug on the way out?
No, Andy, this will be fun to, this will be another fun week of football. This football season, for whatever reason, because maybe it's just because all the parity that's going on right now and some of these teams that you expect to be doing well struggling and some of the bylines, they obviously the Titans coach just got fired and there's the situation going on down in Miami, which I just have some, you know, general interest in because I was down there working. It's been a really interesting football season and I'm enjoying the hell out of it.
I am too. I love that there's a little bit of parity, that there's not just a dominant team, you know, boat racing everyone any week, that everything always feels up for grabs. You don't know what's going to happen next. Feels like just when you get a grasp on something, it goes in an opposite direction. So I'm all in. I'm having a blast. And I know Packers fans want to see some more decisive victories, but right now I'll take all the wins that they can get while they continue to kind of get better and not perform their process, or better perform their process throughout the course of the season. Yeah, follow him, Mike Wall 68. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.